We're back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. You can see their work over on Cincinnati.com. How you guys doing?
You know, in a normal year, I would be in Tampa Bay for the Super Bowl, probably just getting done with Roger Goodell's press conference and thinking about going to the beach later and discussing Super Bowl party plans, what to eat. Instead, I am locked in the house in the middle of a pandemic. So that's how I'm doing right now.
Tyler, I've been wondering this all week. Last week, because of the cold temperatures, you said you were going to pursue a hot chocolate after we finished recording. And I'm wondering whether or not you ended up getting that hot chocolate.
Good question, Charlie. I did not drink hot chocolate that day. I've actually had more than a few glasses of wine since the last podcast. My favorite wine right now is the Snoop Dogg wine right now is Cali Red. So I highly recommend that wine for those that are wine drinkers. It's a red wine, kind of sweet, a little bit, got a smoky taste. Highly recommend it.
I'll say this, and I'll tie it into drinking. I think Bengals fans are hoping they're not going to have to do a whole lot of that when they go into the 2021 season and what this offseason will entail when we get into free agency. And you guys, I threw this out on social media the other day, and I thought to myself, look, we've talked about the question marks, what this team will do when it gets into March, if they'll re-sign some of the internal guys, what happens with the number five pick. There are a lot of unknowns as of February, and I know the list could be really long, and obviously Joe Burrow's health and when Joe Burrow is going to be back out there. As of now, what we heard with the latest update, he should be running and throwing within the next couple weeks, so all good news on the rehab front. But besides Joe Burrow, what are some of the other unknowns at the top of this list if you had to pick one going into 2021?
Well, my answer is going to be kind of broad, but I'm going to go with the Bengals defense as a whole. There are quite a few question marks on the defensive side of the football. Carl Lawson is a free agent. William Jackson is a free agent. Josh Bynes, the starting linebacker, is a free agent. Mackenzie Alexander at slot cornerback. You have Mike Daniels in the middle in the defensive interior, a reserve safety now, Sean Williams. All those guys are free agents. And not to mention Geno Atkins' uncertain future. And also the health and return of DJ Reader from a quad injury. Trey Waynes tore his pectoral and missed the entire season. How do those to bounce back in 2021? So mine is just the defense as a whole. It's unknown to put it lightly. The defense finished obviously the bottom half of the NFL and overall defense, and there's a lot of free agents. The Bengals struggled rushing the passer, finished last in NFL in sacks. Their pass defense wasn't all that great, so they're hoping Trey Waynes makes a difference at cornerback and DJ Reader comes back healthy and strong. But also all the other players that I mentioned too, those are all starters with the exception of Sean Williams at safety. And then also Geno Atkins, his future. The Bengals could cut ties with him. It could be a mutual decision. They will save over $9 million if they release them. So there are a lot of questions surrounding that Bengals defense.
Kind of bouncing off that, how much money are they going to have? Kind of over this past week, I've tried to map out different paths the Bengals could take. How does, hypothetically, if they get two offensive linemen in free agency, impact what they can do in the draft? How does extending Carl Lawson impact what they can do in free agency in the draft, et cetera? So using the great calculator on Over the Cap, you know, it really stresses that there are some foundational decisions the Bengals probably will have to make at the start of free agency. Here are the big ones: whether or not to keep Geno Atkins, whether or not to keep Bobby Hart, whether or not to extend Carl Lawson and Will Jackson. The answer to those questions shape the rest of the offseason. Because again, the difference between getting rid of all of them or letting all of them move on versus retaining all of them is $18 million difference in cap space. The difference between having $50 million and $30 million in cap space. That completely reshapes whether or not the Bengals are able to get one of the mid-tier pass rushers and get a starting right tackle. Because they have needs to fill across the roster as well. Even if they have $30 million in cap space, a couple of that's got to go to a quarterback, a couple of that's got to go to some sort of wide receiver, et cetera. How much money are they going to be able to spend? The answer to that question starts with the guys they have in-house. So that's still the biggest, the most important question I think that they're probably using this time to answer now. Who are they going to keep? How much money can they spend elsewhere if they decide to move on?
Before I get to mine, I will just do a quick plug right here. When you talk about cap space, I did play a little bit of a scenario, how much room the Bengals will have if they were making moves today. PFF's Brad Spielberger, so you're going to want to check that out at the end of the Bengals Beat podcast. But for me, I'll just go with a topic we've talked about for 2 years now. The offensive line, not the tackle play. I'm still setting the guard. I feel this team still has the money, even if, you know, they hang on to some of their other guys, retain a guy like Carl Lawson, William Jackson III. I still don't see them keeping both of them. And that's no offense to what William Jackson III was able to do last year. I think he'll get money, but I don't think it's going to be in Cincinnati. That's all to be determined. I have no sources telling me that at this moment, but I think they move on from him. I still look at the guard play. I want to know if this team decides to spend the money at the guard position, even though Tyler Dragon will tell us he doesn't see that happening. I think that's the biggest unknown because it's their poorest play on the offensive line. And the most important asset they have on this team is their franchise quarterback coming off an injury. So I think that's my biggest unknown right now.
Well, the only reason I say I don't see them spending money at the guard position in free agency is because they quite frankly spent money at the guard position last free agency, and I don't see them cutting ties with Xavier Suofilo. And I mean, they could, and I mean, my thoughts, I haven't heard this from a coach or another source, but I just think that they're going to try to retain Quinn Spain and have Xavier Suofilo and probably build through the draft at offensive line, but I could be wrong.
I'm glad the conversation turned to guards. Quick plug. I'm sorry bringing the plugs up early in the podcast, but on Friday I'll have a story, fact or fiction, analyzing the Bengals' history of investing in the offensive guard position specifically over the last 15 years. It's fascinating when you compare what the Bengals have done to what the rest of the league has done. So I've shared some of this before, but let me run through a couple stats real quick. Last season, the average offensive guard starter in the NFL made $5.85 million. Last season, the Bengals' five guards on the roster made less than that, $5.55 million. Since 2005, the Bengals have spent $23 million total on external free agents who play offensive guard. They're going to have to spend more than that on one offensive guard if they want to get a Joe Tooney or Brandon Scherff over a multi-year contract. They get that multi-year contract, it's going to cost more than they've spent over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Lastly, the most shocking one I thought was, the number isn't in front of me. Oh, here it is. The Bengals have started an undrafted free agent in 267 games over the last 30 years. That's nearly 50% more often than the average NFL team. So it's a team that historically has had a ton of undrafted free agents, a ton of free agents making an average of $1 million or less, which obviously, guys, you don't prioritize. And then, of course, your Clint Bowlings and Kevin Zeitlers, et cetera. There's one exception to this whole guard thing, which is 2019, Zach Taylor's first season. And this is what makes me more, I guess, encouraged or more inclined to think that the Bengals could spend on a guard. Literally the 1 year they invested in that position was Zach Taylor's first free agency. And they went out and paid John Miller, made him an above average paid guard in the NFL. And they made a fourth round pick. They made Michael Jordan a fourth round pick. And a fourth round pick actually, surprisingly, is a big investment in an offensive guard. You can read more about that in my piece. So that kind of has me thinking that they might do something kind of on a starter level, even a little more than they did for Xavier Suofilo, just because that's something Zach Taylor has shown he's willing to do differently than the previous coaching staff and front offices with different coaching staff. But in general, nothing here leads me to believe that the Bengals are going to break the bank.
Yeah, dream scenario would be obviously the Bengals sign Joe Tooney or Brandon Scherff in free agency. I just don't see it happening. They're going to command top dollar on the open market for guards.
Yeah, moving around to the NFL right now, not a lot going on in Bengals world. That's all going to change when we hit March and of course the NFL draft. But everybody knows Saturday night, low-key breaking news. Of course, it's not official, but it's out there. Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford, a nice little trade going on. Detroit, the Los Angeles Rams. This had us bring up a little fun conversation out there on the Twitter world, and we'll get to it, and I want to tie it into Joe Burrow. Top 10 quarterbacks. I put it out there. I knew I would get hammered for it. I said Matthew Stafford is a top 10 quarterback. Before I get to mine, what did you guys think of that trade, and where are you putting him in the NFL right now?
So I think both sides won the trade, and I feel like I'm in a minority a little bit. I see a lot of people think, you know, the Lions got a slam dunk deal in the trade. Not only, you know, did they get Jared Goff, but they got, you know, a lot of draft picks in the deal. It's where they could build their franchise. But also, you know, the Rams got better at quarterback, and we've seen they don't really value first round picks right now. They're in win now mode. So I think the Rams got what they wanted as well. Now, where do I rank Matthew Stafford overall in the top 10? I probably have him right outside the top 10. Now, I did my top 10 quarterbacks, and I'm probably going to get heat for some of these picks. But my first pick, best quarterback in the NFL, I think is not debatable, as Patrick Mahomes. I think everybody can agree that he is the best quarterback in the National Football League. And there's a gap between Mahomes and the next guy, I believe. And the next guy, in my opinion, number two is Aaron Rodgers. Probably going to win the MVP this year and playing still at a high level. I definitely think he's the number two quarterback in NFL at this point. Number three, I have Russell Wilson. Now, there's a debate, I think, 2 through 10. So all these, it's a fair debate. So three, I have Russell Wilson. Four, I have Deshaun Watson. And I think if you build around Deshaun Watson, give him another top-tier receiver like he had in Hopkins, he can be dynamic even more so than he was last year. Now, number five, even at 43 years old, I have Tom Brady. And I don't think he played like a top five quarterback throughout the regular season, but in the playoffs, he's shown that if he's on the field, he can win you ball games no matter what the situation is. And the NFC Championship game, he wasn't all that great in the second half, especially turning the ball over, but he knows how to win football games, knows how to dissect defenses. And even at 43 years old, I still think he is an upper echelon quarterback. Number six, I have Lamar Jackson. And he needs to develop more throwing the football, but we all know what he can do with his legs. And he has a nice deep ball. He can throw in the middle of the field well, but he still needs to develop as a passer. But overall, as a dual threat quarterback, he's, you can say, better than Michael Vick scrambling and running with the football. Probably one of the best rushing quarterbacks that we've ever seen, if not the best. Number seven, Josh Allen. I would not have picked him at the start of the regular season, but I think that his play this year, I'm basing it off of play this year, who I would want as my quarterback to win a game, or who I will want as my quarterback for that year, not
future. Just those are my three, you know, categories where I'm basing my list on. So Josh Allen at number seven. Number eight, this is hard, but I would probably pick Kyler Murray. And again, these are tall steps. Like, these are very slim margins between 5 and 10. Number nine, I know I'm probably going to get heat for this, but I would go with Justin Herbert at number nine based on what I saw from his rookie year. Number 10, he was hurt last year, but I'm going to go with Dak Prescott. And that's where I have Matthew Stafford too, and even Joe Burrow. So 10 through 15, it's real tight between Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, Joe Burrow. That's kind of my top 10, 15-ish quarterback range. I know I went long, and I know you guys probably have a lot to say off that, so go ahead.
I'll keep this quick. It's a very similar list to Tyler, where I have Stafford checking in at number 11. The one difference is I'll get there when I get there. Mahomes 1, Rodgers 2, Deshaun Watson 3, a little higher than what you had. Brady 4, Wilson 5, Jackson 6, then Prescott, Allen, Murray. Number 10, I think Baker Mayfield in the run he led Cleveland on down the stretch of the season was a turning point for him. And I would rather have Baker Mayfield than Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan, Ryan Tannehill, Derek Carr, and Jimmy Garoppolo, who's that next tier of quarterbacks I had. The two quarterbacks I didn't place who probably belong right in that Mayfield-Stafford-Ryan tier are Herbert and Burrow. I haven't dug deep enough into Herbert's rookie year yet to make a judgment on those two, but I think it's a fascinating conversation. So yeah, like I said, Burrow's right in that next level behind those top nine quarterbacks that I think have won in the playoffs and have more experience doing that. Clearly, Burrow though has the potential to crack that group as soon as next season. Despite I'm not going to predict Burrow to win in the playoffs next season, but I think it's still possible for him to have a strong enough season where we're saying to ourselves, okay, Burrow's just as good, if not better, than say Prescott or Murray. This time next year.
I'll make mine quick too. And this is not in any order. I just want to say that before I do say it. I did put Patrick.
Lindsay, pick an order.
I did put Patrick Mahomes first because that's extremely easy to do when you look in the NFL in the quarterback room. Deshaun Watson, number two, but again, not in any order. Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray. And I did move Justin Herbert in there and Matthew Stafford is in there. I am going to get hammered for it. I get where you guys are coming from with Herbert or with Stafford at number 11, right there, almost in the top 10. I want to see what he can do in Los Angeles. And look, this could be a total fail. And you could look at the Rams and say, man, they're really not planning for the future. They don't have first round picks for a long time. And maybe some would say, this is a hot take, the first round pick doesn't matter, but you look in Cincinnati and obviously they got Joe Burrow. If it's a non-quarterback position, I still feel like it's worthy. Chase Young, look at the Washington football team. But that's a whole nother debate I'm not getting into, not hot takes on this podcast. But yeah, I actually have Matthew Stafford in there as a top 10. I think it's a fascinating argument and I really want to see him on another team, what he's able to do. I think he can shine in Los Angeles. Maybe that gets them all the way. They're all in. It's fun to see. It was like an NBA style trade. No, I'm in for it. I think this is going to be just the start of a eventful offseason. I will add that Joe Burrow, if he played a full season, I would have probably put him in the top 10. I know what he showed, what he was able to do in his rookie year was really impressive, but I don't have him in the top 10 as of now. And I might get hammered for that.
Charlie, you see how Lindsay avoids the smoke all the time? Like,
no.
In her defense, she will put what she thinks on Twitter, despite tweeting things that oftentimes fit the fan base disagrees with. So I'll give her a pass here.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready for the heat, you know, just come at me. And they do. They let me know when I'm wrong when you look at the top 10 quarterbacks right now. Tyler, the Super Bowl bets are out for 2022. Cincinnati Bengals are in not great company when it comes to odds right now. What are their chances to get to the Super Bowl next year?
Well, let me preface my statement by saying these are not my odds. This is BetOnline. I get their emails all the time. They have the Bengals at 75-1 odds for winning the Super Bowl next year. And that's tied for last place with the Broncos, Lions, Jaguars, and Jets. Now, being an optimist like Lindsay, I will say that I think the Bengals, as presently constructed and healthy, I think that they are better than the Broncos, Lions, Jaguars, and Jets. I think if I look at the Bengals roster and all the rosters that I mentioned from the team, those teams mentioned, Broncos, Lions, Jaguars, and Jets, I think the Bengals have more talent than all of those teams. Now, the Jaguars have a chance to tremendously improve their roster through the draft and free agency. We all know that they're probably going to get Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick in the draft. The Jets have a chance to improve their team as well. All these teams do, including the Bengals. But as presently constructed, I think the Bengals are a little bit better than those other teams that they are ranked last with in terms of odds for winning the Super Bowl next year.
And even look at the group above the Bengals, I think, as well. I'm looking at the 11 teams above Cincinnati. I'll run through them really quickly. Washington, New York, Minnesota, Vegas, Houston, Chicago, Carolina, Atlanta, Philly, Pittsburgh, Indianapolis. Basically, and I'm trying to look, you know, I will even argue every single one of these teams could make a big splash at quarterback. The Colts are looking to make a big splash. In Pittsburgh, it's not certain that Ben Roethlisberger will still be there, so they could do something really interesting in that position. Philly, of course, is looking to make quarterback changes. Atlanta could use a high draft pick on a guy like Wilson or Fields. Same with Carolina. Chicago's aggressive for a quarterback. Houston could have a better Deshaun Watson next year, of course, if he returns. But I think Watson staying is the reason that their odds are so high right now. Same with Vegas, Minnesota, New York, and Washington. So there's just more unknown there. And part of the deal with Vegas is you have to consider future possibilities, even if they're not certain, because those factor into the odds. Think of when Tyler's favorite Los Angeles Lakers were one of the big NBA title favorites in June of, would that be 2018, before LeBron was even a member of the team, because the potential of getting LeBron was driving up those odds. So of course, only one team can get Deshaun Watson, and only one team can get Justin Fields or Zach Wilson, or of course, other quarterbacks could be made available as well, very good ones. But there's the potential that one of those teams can add a player like that. While the Bengals, I don't think there's a – think of it as almost like baseball war. You know, Deshaun Watson, say, is a five-win player. I don't think there's any five-win player that the Bengals could add just because they're not adding a quarterback.
I do agree that I think the Bengals are going to be better than the Jets and the Broncos next year. But yeah, I mean, their best player on the team is Joe Burrow. It all determines on what's going to happen around him. And, you know, to Joe Burrow, to, you know, be a critic of him, he didn't play very well against the AFC North. When you look at those Baltimore Ravens game and the Pittsburgh Steelers game, he didn't get a second chance. But your division, I mean, they got to play better, and their division is just better. There's three teams ahead of them right now, and until they can prove that they can play four quarters and they're going to have to get better on defense, not breaking too much news on this podcast, what they do in free agency, how they draft last year. I mean, yes, they drafted Joe Burrow. They get T. Higgins in the second round. You can look at the linebacker room. This team had a good rookie class in 2020, but I mean, I don't see this team making the playoffs. So I'm pretty much on Vegas' side when you look at the odds for 2022 at the moment.
Do you have them making the playoffs in 2023?
Jordan year. I don't know, man. There's so many factors. But we did talk about, and Charlie said, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, it would be a disappointment if this team does not win a playoff game with Joe Burrow during his rookie deal.
Organizational failure is the word that I use.
Oh yeah, it would be. I mean, if you think about it right now, you go back to draft night, you go back to the championship game when Joe Burrow's playing quarterback at LSU, breaking all of the football records, knowing the Bengals are going to take him. People were talking about it. If he wins a playoff game, they'll build a statue in front of Paul Brown Stadium. It's that big of a deal. And you're not paying the guy much right now. You get everybody else better around him. You take advantage of his rookie deal. And that's what this team has to do. But I agree. If they don't go to the playoffs and win some playoff games in 2020, in 2022, the season they're productive and you know, show that they can get somewhere with this quarterback on his rookie deal, then it's going to be a failure. So I think it's extremely important when you look at the future and the few years you'll have after next year. But yeah, I don't see how this team is going to go further next year. Obviously better than they were this year, but I don't see this team stacking up great against the AFC North.
My thing is, you know, I am on the same page with you two a little bit, but it's going to be difficult because Joe Burrow is in the same age range as Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield, and they're not going anywhere either. And Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield have better teams around them. So it's going to be difficult because you have two other teams in the AFC North that their playoff windows are wide open. And you can probably say, in at least Baltimore's case, they're a Super Bowl contender. They're in that Super Bowl threshold. And Cleveland, I don't think anybody expects them to make the Super Bowl. But if they miss the playoffs next year, I think organization-wise, they would think their season was a failure. So they're in that playoff window. And they still have, you know, quarterbacks right smack dab in their prime or just now entering their prime. So it's going to be an interesting next few years for the AFC North Division because there are three really good, promising young quarterbacks in the division. And that's not even counting Ben Roethlisberger, who's, I would say, going to return to Pittsburgh next year, but we all know that his best days are behind him and his retirement is probably a year down the road. So the other three teams, they are going to be fighting for playoff contention. And I do think, like we've said multiple times before, Lindsay, you've said it a lot, that the Bengals have to play catch up with the other teams in the division. Primarily the Ravens and the Browns, because they are young, just like the Bengals are.
So this brings me back to a conversation we had in, I think, October after the first Ravens game about whether or not those are measuring stick games for the Bengals. And I think you both said yes, and I remember I said no. And I remember, here's what I said. The Bengals in 2021 could go 0-6 in the division, theoretically, if they went 0-6. But still finish the season 8-8 or 9-7, making the playoffs. I think the Bengals fans basically throw Zach Taylor a parade. The season would be that much of a success, even if they go winless in conference play. That's just not where the Bengals are at in terms of the success chain. The success that they have to get to next is cracking the playoffs and being in the same tier of teams that I mentioned 2 minutes ago as the teams with odds in that next range above the Bengals, kind of from the Steelers down to the Giants. The Bengals right now are in the tier of the lowest teams with the Jaguars and the Lions and teams like that. They need to get back to the level of the Bears and the Vikings and the Patriots right now, who are clearly not where they used to be. They need to be on level basically of the AFC East, the AFC, NFC East and AFC South teams, or AFC whatever teams they were supposed to play earlier in the season during that stretch of supposedly winnable games that we all predicted would turn around the Bengals season. They need to be in that range first before they can be in the Baltimore Ravens range. I think that's what we're looking for going forward.
I'll just say this. They're hoping that Ben Roethlisberger comes back. I mean, the Steelers are in some major cap problems right now, and Ben is declining. So I think the whole AFC North is like, yeah, go with Ben next year. That's fine. And Tyler, you brought up age. You brought up Joe Burrow's age. And look, this might be a terrible comparison right now, and I thought about it yesterday when they were talking about the two Super Bowl teams. You have, and I'm not comparing the quarterback position to tight end, but I'm using age as an example right now. Travis Kelce and Gronk are around the same age. Travis Kelce has 3 years left in the end, 3 years less in the NFL than Gronk does. What tight end you taking right now? Same age, one has 3 years less experience in the NFL. Age doesn't mean anything.
Well, I see what you're saying, but it's totally different when it comes to the quarterback position and how many miles you have in your body. And that's based on how many hits you're taking. Ben Roethlisberger has taken a lot of hits over the course of his career. He holds the football long. During the early portion of his career, he liked to, you know, scramble, get outside the pocket and take hits on some plays. Tom Brady, who's older than Big Ben, doesn't take hits at all. He'll get the ball out of his hands quick. And if he sees somebody, a defender in the vicinity of him, he'll go straight down. Now, the tight end position, Travis Kelce, he's done well with taking care of his body. He doesn't take a lot of huge hits, catching passes over the middle. Gronk, he was injured in college. He's been injured multiple times in the NFL. So those injuries, you know, start taking a toll on the body. And, you know, that's had a tremendous effect on Gronk. And we can see it. There's a legitimate case can be made that Gronk is the best tight end of all time. But now, you know, he's pretty much a shell of himself. He's still a productive player. We saw that in the NFC Championship game, him catching one of the biggest passes of the game. But he's certainly not the Gronk of old. And Travis Kelce, who's taken care of his body, and he's had had a good and also you I can say a lucky career on the injury front, because he hasn't been dealt with a lot of injuries like a lot of other tight ends. So that has certainly helped him in, you know, the past 30 portion of his career.
Okay, moving on. Before we get to our Super Bowl predictions and the MVP, I know you have a piece coming out with the should-be Hall of Famer, Kenny Anderson, and he talks Joe Burrow. He has praised Joe Burrow since day one. I know he's familiar with him personally and obviously on the field. He stated that he's a top-notch quarterback already. How are you feeling about that, Tyler?
So he actually said that he is going to be a top-notch quarterback, and I thought it was interesting because – you know, there are a lot of Bengals fans and, you know, even players around the NFL, coaches who think Burrow is already a top-notch quarterback. I do think, you know, Burrow, you know, he was having one of the best rookie seasons that we have ever seen in NFL history before he got hurt against the Washington football team. Obviously on pace to shatter several rookie records, including Andrew Luck's single season passing record for rookies. But right now, I won't say he's top notch. I mean, those top notch, I think, in my opinion, are Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson. You can throw Tom Brady in there. That's the top notch quarterbacks, I would say. Now, Burrow certainly has potential to be a top-notch quarterback, and we didn't see a large enough sample size for him as a rookie. And we also, you know, I don't want to be prisoner of the moment, because a lot of times in year two and three, we really find out about a quarterback. They have the benefit of multiple games under their belts, multiple seasons under their belts, but also the defense has the benefit of multiple games of watching film and trying to dissect the quarterback and putting the quarterback in positions where he's uncomfortable with. So Burrow is going to have to deal with that a little bit in year two. So it's going to be interesting to see how he improves in year two. I know he wants to develop his arm strength a little bit and be more accurate downfield. But I can't say right now he's a top-notch quarterback, but he certainly has potential to be a top-notch quarterback.
So look back to the list we just mentioned. I'm not going to rule out Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers playing for the next 5-10 seasons, because I don't want them to I don't want this to get played back 10 years from now. But in all realistic expectations, make you think that pretty soon we're going to be able to cross off Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers off that list. that leaves openings. So do you think that Joe Burrow can progress quicker than Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, and Dak Prescott? I think there's a real, honestly, I would bet on him developing into a better quarterback than all of them in the next 2, 3, or 4 seasons. So he's coming. I completely get that potential.
He's coming. Cincinnati shirt's going to get that on a t-shirt soon. You guys, a big one, the GOAT versus the soon to be greatest quarterback of all time, Patrick Mahomes on Sunday. I'm really excited for this game, but it brings up a lot of questions. And before I get to the MVP predictions, if Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucks beat Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl, is this the greatest run that Tom Brady has had to a championship ever?
Wow. He's certainly had a lot of them. Man, you put me on the spot there. I would say yes, because he's beaten Hall of Famers in the process. And I don't say that lightly. Now, let me say, you know, it's not just he and Drew Brees on the field. Tom Brady certainly has a lot of help around him. And, you know, the teams that he's beaten, it's not just Drew Brees, it's not just Aaron Rodgers. But to go on a Super Bowl run and you beat Aaron Rodgers-led Packers team in the NFC Championship game. And before that, you beat Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. I had the Saints in the Super Bowl as my preseason pick. I didn't know Drew Brees' arm was going to, you know, falter down the stretch, and he was dealing with injuries as well. But, yeah, this has been a remarkable run to the Super Bowl for Tom Brady, not just because of the teams that he has beaten, but also, I mean, he's 43 years old, 43 years old doing this. They're a road team. They've had to travel on the road to Landover, Maryland, and beat the Washington football team, to New Orleans, to Green Bay. And, you know, to be a wild card team, making a run like this, his age, obviously a factor, playing with an all new team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, first season, to be able to help them and lead them to the Super Bowl. It is, if it's not the greatest run that Tom Brady's had to Super Bowl, it's certainly amongst the top. Now, he's been there, this is his 10th Super Bowl. I don't think he's going to win it, but I do think that this has been a remarkable run. It's a testament to how he keeps his mind and body prepared for action every Sunday. So, you know, it's remarkable what he's been able to do throughout his career.
It's got to be the most impressive, I think, because he's older than he was for all of the other Super Bowls. The older I think that Tom Brady gets, and not to make this about age, but come on, he's in his 40s. The older he gets, the more unprecedented what he's doing is. While I think that Patrick Mahomes is a better quarterback right now and probably has a higher ceiling career-wise, maybe not in terms of championships, but just in terms of overall skill level than Tom Brady did at any point, Tom Brady is playing at a high level for a really good offense at 43, continuing the most productive wins-wise and longevity-wise quarterback career that I've ever seen. He's probably right up there with Elway and Montana in that category. It's incredible. And, you know, while you can debate the quality of the teams he'll have to face, obviously Mahomes in this Super Bowl will be as difficult of a task as it gets. But just the fact that he's doing even more unprecedented things than he had already been doing, I mean, gotta give him credit.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be one of the greatest runs that he's ever had. And as you guys already mentioned, the guy's in his 40s. I don't see him walking away anytime soon. If the Bucs were able to win, I think it'd be perfect to just be like, I'm done. I have my Super Bowl ring again. I'm good. I'm walking away. Has all the money in the world. But I doubt that happens because he's a pretty big competitor. I think I know our predictions, but we're going to go ahead and give them right now. Who you guys got on Sunday and who's your MVP?
Well, our picks are also going to be on Cincinnati.com later this week. So make sure you go on there to look at Cincinnati.com and our picks. I already said it. I just think the Chiefs are the better football team. They've been hurt along the offensive line. They're going to be without their two starting tackles. That is something to watch for on Sunday. But when you have the best quarterback in the game, and I don't even think there's a close second, that gives you a tremendous advantage. Not only that, their defense is, you know, I don't think it's better than Tampa Bay's defense, but Kansas City's defense is pretty good. Tyrann Mathieu is playing good football. So I just think that overall, Kansas City's offense, you know, they can score with anybody. Actually, nobody can score with them. So I have Kansas City winning the game 34 and Tampa Bay 26 and Patrick Mahomes winning MVP.
I just want to credit the Bucs and the Chiefs for building teams the right way. Of course, the Chiefs have had some injuries on the offensive line, but kind of not taking those injuries into account. Both teams got some of the best playmakers at their position, with Kelce and Hill and Godwin and Mike Evans. I mean, both teams are just loaded on offense, and I think we're seeing more and more that that's the best way to sustain success as an NFL team. I think they're very even, and I think the game's going to go to overtime. I'm picking Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs to win 35-28.
Let me ask you this. Is it going to be a final drive in overtime or a final drive to get to overtime that you feel like Patrick Mahomes is going to put them ahead, or is it going to be the Bucs?
I didn't think it through that much. Why not? Let's see Tom Brady make a drive in regulation to tie it, and then let the kid have his due after that.
I'm here for it. I think it's going to be a great matchup. I know there's a lot of talk about the offensive line. Yeah, they're going to be up without one of their best players. And their center, I love the matchup with the defensive line with Tampa. Both defenses, they're okay. I just want to think this is going to just be an all-out scoring game. I like how Patrick Mahomes has played all season long. This team has yet to put four good quarters together. I like Tyreek Hill, his playmakers, Travis Kelce. I actually have Tyreek Hill being the MVP in this game. I have Kansas City winning 34-21. I think it's going to be close until the fourth quarter.
Nice. Yeah, Tyreek Hill, I'm impressed every time he touches the ball. He's the fastest player in the NFL with the football in his hands, and he legit has track speed. He was a track and field runner before he reached the NFL, and you can tell that he has that real legit sprinter speed.
Plenty on Cincinnati.com. As I mentioned, we'll have an interview with ProFootballFocus.com, Brad Spielberger on the South, when you look at the cap space, and more on the Bengals offseason moves, what could happen in Cincinnati. What else is up there, guys?
So the Bengals did not have any Pro Bowlers this year, but I have a story on why Jesse Bates might be a Pro Bowler in the very near future. And we touched on it earlier in the podcast. I interviewed Bengals' great quarterback, Ken Anderson, earlier this week. Let's just say he was very impressed with what he saw from Joe Burrow in Burrow's first season. So I have a story on that. And like I said, we have our Super Bowl picks. We just revealed them on this podcast. But we'll have our picks online as well as a few more other Cincinnati Inquirer journalists.
I have a feature on Travis Kelce. I went back and spoke to people who were around when he was at UC, everyone from Butch Jones to Marty Gilliard. On the Bengals front, I mentioned it earlier in this podcast, all the story publishing Friday. Fact or fiction, do the Bengals really invest in their offensive line?
Make sure you go check that out. I know everybody's interested in the offseason moves. What could happen when we get into March? Make sure you're following along over on Twitter, EQ Sports, over on Instagram, EQ Bengals. And thank you for listening to the Bengals.
Hold on. What you know what time?
Oh, the questions. I was really trying to wrap that podcast up. No, go ahead, Tyler.
See how Lindsay always does me. This is Super Bowl week, And she was not about to let me ask questions of the week.
We were going longer than normal. You know, I was just wrapping up the podcast.
I'm just messing with you. So I actually have three questions of the week. Now, there's a lot surrounding the Super Bowl. We all know media hype, Super Bowl week, it's a lot. But besides the game, what do you most look forward to about either Super Bowl week or even during the game?
I'm not a real big, I know everybody's going to say it's commercials, you know, the halftime performance. I normally, but it's a COVID year, so obviously I'm not going to have a Super Bowl party or anything like that. But the food is just different. The food on Super Bowl Sunday is different. I'm a big wing person. You obviously have to have some desserts. And you just low-key watch football all day. It feels like the Super Bowl lasts longer than a normal football game because of the longer halftime show and then obviously the pregame situation. I look forward to the whole day. Obviously, the game and the matchup is going to be really good, but the food's just different.
So not to get too all existential, but one of the kind of pop culture trends over the past 5 years is no one watches the same things anymore. Like people used to back in the day, I'll watch, you know, American Idol and Survivor and The Office and Friends, and we don't do that anymore. Kind of Game of Thrones is one of the last shows like that. And so you still get that with the Super Bowl. It's a real communal experience where the day before, that day, the next day, everyone's kind of talking about the same thing. And that shared experience is something we shouldn't take for granted.
Oh, I love that, Charlie.
Okay. Well, those are both obviously good. You know, for me, you know, as a sports reporter and analyst, I rarely get to watch sporting events as just a fan of a sport. So, you know, I'm actually just looking forward to watching the game as a fan of football, as well as the commercials, the halftime show. And also Amanda Gorman is going to read an original poem. So I'm looking forward to that as well. So that is what I'm looking forward to about this particular Super Bowl. So my next question is along those lines. What is your favorite food and beverage to have during the Super Bowl?
I mean, I'm just going to go with wings. I did mention it in my last answer. You can't go wrong with wings. I am a boneless wing person, so I'm probably not getting bonus points for admitting that on this podcast. Anything that's just not healthy, obviously some cookies, desserts. Somebody always brings something, but obviously I'm not having a party. I'm not doing anything big. Just a few friends I'll be watching the Super Bowl with. And then I am of age, so probably an alcoholic beverage. I'm not working the Super Bowl or anything like that. I'll be home on my couch, so I feel like it's appropriate. Yeah, you can't go wrong with beers and wings.
What kind of beer?
This is, again, something I'm not getting bonus points. I'm a big amber or wheat style beer. Okay. I know craft is really big and important in Cincinnati and maybe in other cities. But yeah, I'll just take a Blue Moon. That's totally fine with me. It's not cool. It's not a good pick, but I like it.
I want to shout out a dear family friend, Bobby Brandt, who with the aside from maybe 1 or 2 years, I've been to his Super Bowl party every year for probably the last 20 years. It's the strangest menu. The main dishes are cold cuts and White Castle sliders, and they bring out graters for dessert. So just because that is so ingrained as a tradition in my mind, it's almost like having turkey on Thanksgiving for me. While those aren't my favorite foods, it's just part of the experience.
Okay. What about the drink? You're of age, Charlie.
I'm of age. I'll take a beer. Maybe even a Coke. It's Super Bowl gets late sometimes. So I'll get a beer and then I'll follow that up with a Coke.
Okay. Nice. So for me, it varies, but I like, you know, having maybe nachos at a Super Bowl or some chips with a 7-layer bean dip, and also an adult beverage. If it's not wine, I typically have, you know, maybe.
We're back on Cincinnati.com. I had to bring in one of the experts over at Pro Football Focus. You know, I highly recommend the guys, Brad Spielberger. Brad, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
All right, cap news. It is that time of year. We haven't even officially hit the offseason, but you know the NFL. There is no offseason this week. I'm going to go right to it. Lions and Rams on a late Saturday night. They're just going to throw in some low-key news, quarterback news. What did you think about the trade?
It was quite a blockbuster, and honestly, it's very interesting for a lot of different reasons. I think the primary reason why it's a bit confusing to analyze from my perspective is what Jared Goff's value is. You know, was it a contract dump like a Brock Osweiler situation, or did the Lions actually want Jared Goff, you know, and view him as a, maybe not a long-term starter, but at least, you know, the next 2 years, he has a lot of guarantees left these next 2 years. So it's interesting when you get future picks involved and you get a player involved. It was a big package, no question. But it was just interesting to hear how, like, Carolina had the number 8 pick on the table. And, you know, Detroit opted to go with, you know, some future picks instead.
I'm going to go to the Bengals right now because everything looks different during COVID years. Nothing really is official going into 2021 right now, but I'm going to play a little scenario with you. If this team cuts AJ Green, or they're going to move on likely from AJ Green, they move on from Geno Atkins, they move on from Bobby Hart and those big contracts going into 2021. What does that look like when you look at the cap room for this team?
Yeah, so the Bengals are one of the, you know, healthier cap teams in the NFL. They're sixth in projected cap space for 2021 before any moves like that. And those three moves would get that, well, again, AJ Green just not being retained, would get them to $50 million in cap space, which is a lot of money. And they also don't have a lot of money pushed down into the future. So, you know, you can borrow from future years if you want. Cincinnati doesn't really love to do that compared to other teams. But so they're in a very healthy cap situation, and they can be aggressive as they were last offseason.
You talk about being aggressive right now. A lot of people look on the defensive side, and you look at last season, they spent a ton of money. And you'd say, well, what did you do for your offensive line? I'll get to that in just a moment. But if this team re-signs Carl Lawson and they look at their secondary and they said, okay, well, we really don't know what we have in Trey Waynes, but he's going to be one of our starters out there despite not playing last year. You bring William Jackson III back, which I don't think it's possible to bring both of those defensive players when you look at Jackson and Lawson. Would this team be able to do those two moves and still spend big money on a free agent offensive lineman?
So from a cap perspective, they definitely could. They could find the requisite room. They could kind of push that contract down the line. It becomes a question of cash, right? So it becomes a question of how much they're willing to spend in the offseason. And if they retain both of those guys, you know, I'm looking at $13 to $14 million per year for both of those contracts. It would be, you know, pretty large upfront expenditures. You know, especially the way the Bengals structure deals with some larger signing bonuses because they don't guarantee money, you know, beyond the first year. So they could, but as you said, it might then limit their ability to add, you know, a high-priced guard or something like that. They'd have to maybe look for a more of a bargain bin option at that point.
Joe Burrow, year two of his rookie deal. You look around the NFL, some teams are not so lucky. I mean, even the recent Rams and Lions trade. How do the Bengals take advantage of this Burrow rookie deal right now?
Yeah, so, I mean, they did what they do last offseason and do it again is you should spend a little bit. You know, it's the one of the more valuable assets, if not the most valuable asset in football right now, is having a good quarterback on a rookie contract. You know, we've seen it with Mahomes. We saw it with Watson. Obviously, it didn't go too well. But, you know, you can go down the list of examples where when you have a quarterback that's probably worth, you know, $30, $40 million a year in a true market, you know, making $9, $10 million a year, you kind of have to capitalize that and spend around him. So I think they absolutely have to shore up the offensive line. The weaponry is solid, but maybe add a piece there as well, which, you know, I'm sure we'll get to. And then also just definitely get back to, you know, those solid Bengals defenses we're used to. It doesn't have to be the best defense, but, you know, back in the upper half of the NFL.
Speaking of weapons right now, you have a Tyler Boyd. I feel like T. Higgins really stepped up in his rookie year to be determined what he looks like in year two with a healthy Joe Burrow. Is there a free agent wide receiver out there right now that you feel like would be possible to add to this offense?
Yeah, I think there's one target, you know, a bit of a cheaper option, so that could help, you know, in that way as well, is Curtis Samuel from the Carolina Panthers. So they have the Ohio State connection. I think about it, they may have crossed paths back when Joe was back at Ohio State. And I think he'll probably get around $10 to $12 million per year. Very different from the two guys we mentioned, right? So Boyd in the slot and Higgins out wide, bigger bodied receivers, where Samuel's kind of your gadget player at this point. He had about 5 carries a game out of the backfield last year. He, you know, they use him in the slot a lot as well, but a lot of shorter routes, a lot of yards after the catch. So I think he'd fit really well in that offense as just, you know, kind of a change of pace from the two guys that, you know, we mentioned.
What's the best and worst case scenario when you look at cap space? Because I find it as an interesting conversation when you go into the offseason.
Yeah, so the danger you can run into, the worst case scenario, as we're seeing with the Saints this offseason, the Eagles a little bit as well, is basically, I think folks look at the cap as a one-year thing where you can spend a single year's cap. And in reality, you can essentially borrow from future years. But the downside is, of course, is that bill does eventually become due. So what the Saints were doing for years upon years to kind of capitalize on the Breeze window was they were pushing money out into the future, because on a bonus, you can prorate the bonus up to 5 years. So basically, you can either have a $20 million salary that would all hit 2021, or a $20 million signing bonus over 5 years would be $4 million cap hits in each of the 5 years. So they kept restructuring deals, kept giving bonuses, kept doing all this stuff. And eventually it turns into what we call dead money, which is they owe something like $50 million to players that are not on the roster because it's just been pushed down the line. Those guys are no longer playing, but the cap charges are still there. So that is the, you know, the worst case scenario you can run into.
Is the cap space an illusion? Because social media was going a little bit crazy Saturday and Sunday when they were talking about cap space in the NFL right now.
So that kind of, I think, touches on what I said about the whole multi-year aspect of it, is that a single year, you're not constrained by a single year of cap space. So in that way, it's something of an illusion. But eventually, like I said, eventually the bill does become due. You can't just ignore the cap forever and think you'll get away with it. But it can be manipulated to a pretty extreme degree. You know, I think we've seen teams go all out and do a lot of different mechanisms and just ways to push money down the line. So I would say it's an illusion in that if the Bengals came out this offseason and said they were worried about their cap and that's why they couldn't spend on someone, I'm not going to say they're lying, but it's not true. The constraint is cash. But no, you should not just, you know, basically ignore the cap and just think you can just manipulate it forever. Because eventually, you know, you become the Saints, who are projected to be $100 million over the salary cap. So it's definitely real eventually.
I'm going to go to your piece right now. Low-cost free agent signings that can make a big impact. You're going to want to check it out on PFF. We mentioned wide receivers. Is there any other guys on the list that you really feel like this team could add when you look at the Bengals locker room right now?
100%. So I think the Bengals made it pretty clear after trading Carlos Dunlap away that they, you know, were not comfortable with their edge rushing group. They signed Tack McKinley, obviously. They picked him up off waivers. He obviously failed the physical, and so they waived him as well. But they clearly wanted to continue to address that position even beyond, you know, even with the Carl Lawson playing well, they wanted to add more talent there. And I think Romeo Okwara, Detroit Lions edge rusher this past year, would be a great option. He had a phenomenal year. Bit of a speed rusher, a bit of a pure pass rusher, maybe not a full complete game, but a guy that can really scream off the edge and get you a lot of pressures. He had, I think, 10 sacks this year and shouldn't be as expensive as most 10 sack guys are, you know, former undrafted free agent, a bit one dimensional, but could make a big impact, around the defensive line that has talent, you know, with Reeder and Lawson, if they bring him back, would just be a good complementary piece.
I mentioned no offseason in the NFL, and I know the same for ProFootballFocus.com. What is over there on PFF right now?
Yeah, so this is my season. You know, there's the offseason is my season. So, free agency and the draft is going to be, you know, spearheading our coverage as soon as the Super Bowl ends. Just covering every angle of, you know, both looking at the players, but also looking at how teams can move forward. The salary cap should be announced. I think this week we'll get an idea of an estimate, and that'll obviously kind of influence the projections and everything like that. So I guess I would recommend the free agent rankings board. It has our 100 free agents listed with contract projections for myself for everyone. And we're going to be pushing that out to 150 pretty soon. And then also getting, you know, potential cap casualties, you know, vets that get cut for contract reasons that could be still, you know, solid contributors for other teams. So I would check that out and keep an eye on that as the offseason unfolds.
Brad Spielberger, where can fans find you over on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at PFF_Brad. Talking cap and contracts for all 32 teams, trade value, stuff like that. I've done work there as well. So, you know, the Stafford golf trade and all the other things that sound like they're going to happen in the near future, the Deshaun Watson blockbuster potentially, I'll be chopping it up about all that stuff all off season long.
One of the best football sites, PFF. Go check it out. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
Hennessy and cranberry or ginger ale. That's usually my go-to.
Yeah,
I
don't know a lot of people who are drinking wine and watching football, but you know what? If you were Tyler, all power to you.
It depends because, you know, on the East Coast and on the East side of the country, the Super Bowl comes on so late. Like, it's what, 6:30? So by the time the game ends, it's almost 10 o'clock. So, you know, the fourth quarter, you might want to get some wine. You know, the times where I've either, you know, covered a Super Bowl or watched a Super Bowl in the West Coast, it comes on at 3:30. So, yeah, beers, hard alcohol, whatever. So, yeah. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with wine.
Nothing wrong with wine, but I am jealous of anybody on Mountain or Central time. They have it perfect. I know you could even say on the West Coast, having that 3-hour difference, but I think Mountain time, Central time is the best time to watch sporting events, and I'm jealous of all of them because Eastern is a little difficult, even though the kick isn't super late. I just feel that way. But plenty, as the guys mentioned, on Cincinnati.com to get you ready for the Super Bowl. Make sure you check it out. Go follow along over on Twitter, E&Q Sports, Instagram, E&Q Bengals, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.